A Great Disappointment, an Inception fanfiction written by Stargraves, read by Hiding Places. Robert Fisher, from the time he was a boy to the disaffected weariness of his adulthood, had always suffered from a chronic disability that would forever, in the eyes of his father, mark him as some kind of genetic mistake in the scope of his bloodline. At a very young age, he displayed a propensity for shyness, the fragile, debilitating kind of embarrassment that bordered on social impotency. He was soft-spoken, examined his shoes during introductions, and the unflinching intimacy of looking someone in the eye filled him with a small, shuddering terror. Maurice Fisher could never reconcile his son's severe lack of courage, which was exactly what he called it, with someone who was to be his heir apparent. His mother, Julia Fisher, a blue-eyed Englishwoman with a sad smile, succumbed to an undignified death after a short and bitter battle with an expanding brain tumor. She died while her husband was traveling internationally, and Robert had been obligated to weather the last of her brain's vicious misfirings alone. She'd shrieked and thrown herself around, spitting and hissing obscenities at her son. The morning that she died, she had a moment of apparent lucidity and asked to hold him one last time. Eager to give her the parting reassurance, he let her. Of course he did. And then, with the soothing unflappability of a mother doing what is best for her sulking children, she tried to strangle him. She died minutes later after failing to do so. Maurice Fisher never heard this story, and if he had, he wouldn't have offered his son any better sympathy. Instead, he resigned himself to the fact that Robert was all he had to work with and hammered at the deficiencies of the boy's character with the blunt instrument of his disdain. By the time he was 30, he'd inherited Maurice's business savvy and was, in the unfiltered opinion of others, dazzlingly intelligent. The only criticism that severely distinguished him from his father, the one Maurice could never to his satisfaction scrub out of Robert, was his lack of Maurice's ebullient rage. As a CEO, Maurice had tyrannized the business world and the businessmen in it. He was a towering god of capitalism. Robert, on the other hand, was purported to drop his eyes and murmur during business conferences, and often had to be coaxed by bemused senior advisors to speak up. He would allow others to interrupt him. He had no talent for bluster, and this was inexcusable weakness. It would haunt Maurice until his deathbed, where he would wring the last of his shriveled heart for strength to assure Robert of his unfailing disappointment before dying. It was quietly assumed Robert would humbly acquire his inheritance and run his father's empire with the respectful proficiency of a prince taking the crown from a warlord. And then Robert tore apart his father's empire. The ruthless abandon with which he did so rocked the world. He deconstructed the whole of the monopoly Maurice had built. He did so with the fervency of a man possessed. And he was possessed. The idea that possessed him was so integral to the core of his being that his shyness burned away in the vanguard of it, and he literally frightened men into compliance with his vision. The international conglomerate he proposed threatened to change the face of energy forever, and the world boggled at the radical fearlessness of Robert Fisher. The ideas in his head would remake an era. But before they did that, some ideas would come bursting through the back of his thoughts and reconstitute the way Robert saw the world. It was nearly a year after his father died. Robert was walking down the street when he happened to see the ghost from the shores of his subconscious. Playing in the park. At first he didn't know that he knew him, but then he was certain. The ghost was chasing a little blonde girl no more than 7 years near a merry-go-round, the girl shrieking with the joy of the chase. He was relatively tall and good-looking, sort of slim. He was probably a few years short of 40, and he caught his daughter, gathered her up with the fierce joy that belongs to parents alone. Robert watched him shout things like, "I have you now!" while the girl screamed, "No, Daddy, no!" and suffered terrible tickling. This went on until a small boy attached himself to his leg, presumably to rescue his sister. Robert couldn't look away. He was inhabited wholly by the idea that this man was important. That in mind, he crossed the lawn toward the family. His son was still anchored to his knee, so the man was obliged to stand there and pay attention when Fisher approached him and said, "I know you." Robert was interested in the remarkable effect he had on the stranger. He gauged that the man recognized him immediately, and the bluish gunmetal gray of his eyes went momentarily wild. He froze like someone confronted with a gun. I'm sorry, I don't think you do, he said, but it was with a kind of fearful desperation. He held his girl more tightly, and it seemed to Robert that he was afraid. Intrigued, he persisted. No, I do. We've met before. I think you have me mistaken for someone else. No, I don't think so. We sat on the same plane together once. You picked up my passport, remember? The man's fear seemed to dissolve only slightly. Robert Fisher, he said it slowly. It was that plane to Los Angeles. Yes, right. No offense, Mr. Fisher, but why did you stop to talk to me? Robert let the words come without really thinking about them and was mildly interested when he said, There's something I wanted to talk to you about that plane trip. He was more than mildly interested when the man's anxiety immediately spiked. Daddy, who's this? The girl in his arms leaned back from her father to peer with curious blue eyes at the businessman. I like your tie. She reached for it immediately in a way that suggested, in her mind, ties were for pulling. Honey, no. The man intercepted her fingers before they latched onto his $200 clothing item. That's not yours. I'm sorry. What? There's something we need to discuss in private, said Robert. I'm sorry, this is ridiculous. What's your name? I never caught it. The man hesitated, eyes flickering to his children, and Robert knew somehow that he was realizing he couldn't give a false name while his kids were listening. However, before he could find a way to excuse himself or say anything at all, the boy at his knee piped up. My name is James Cobb, he said it with dramatic amounts of pride. That's spelled J-A-M-E-S-C-O-B-B. He would have probably gone on, but his father, Mr. Cobb apparently, said with something like panic, James, don't interrupt. Daddy's trying to talk. That's rude. But his parental authority was spoiled somewhat when his daughter looked importantly at Fisher and said, I am Philippa. Philippa A. Cobb. The A stands for Anne. How do you do? She offered her hand to shake with terrible somberness. Robert took her small fingers between his thumb and first two fingers and then shook once. I'm Robert. I know. I heard. I like your tie. She reached for it again. Cobb bundled her quickly to his opposite arm so the tie was out of reach and ignored her pout of disappointment. What do you need to talk to me about? We had one conversation ages ago. Only a year ago. This must be their favorite park? Yes, James replied, having taken a shine to this important-looking stranger. We come here every Sunday. Then we have ice cream over there. He pointed extravagantly to an ice cream parlor across the way, and Robert could see that Cobb was uncomfortable with this fountain of personal facts. He clearly didn't want to know anything about Robert Fisher, and he didn't want Robert Fisher to know anything about him, and this interested him, so he said with great casualness, You're obviously very busy, Mr. Cobb. I wouldn't want to interrupt you, but I'm serious when I say we need to talk. Philippa gave up on Robert's tie and wrapped her arms around her dad's neck. He swallowed and hugged her more tightly and didn't seem aware he was doing it, and while it was fascinating to have someone be terrified of him for reasons he didn't even know about, the sight bothered Robert. It was possible he envied the Cobb children the devotion of their father, but he wanted to talk to the man, not threaten him. Exactly. It was possible part of him wanted to threaten him, but he hadn't figured out why yet. Fisher, said Cobb, I don't know what you want from me. I think you do. I want to talk to you about several things. I'm not upset, I promise you that, but I do need to talk to you. Specifically about your associate. What associate? He smiled. Mr. Charles, of course. Then he enjoyed the naked fear that rippled through Cobb's face. Robert produced his business card and wrote his personal number on the back. When you've got a moment. And don't put it off too long, Cobb. He looked up as he put the card into Cobb's hand, the Arctic ice in his stare frigid sub-zero. I wouldn't want to have to come find you. End of part 1.